where we concluded from the first two classes was on text number 12. Text number 12 is Bhishma Dev is just beginning to speak to Maharaj Yudhisthira, and from the previous class we commented that although Bhishma Dev was suffering on his deathbed, on a bed of arrows, he was in enormous suffering, painful condition. He was completely transcendental to that pain and that suffering. And his first words to Maharaj Yudhisthira were words of compassion for the suffering and pain of the Pandavas. Now the situation is that Maharaj Yudhisthira was grief-stricken not because of his suffering. This is the nature of Vaishnavas. Bhishma Dev is not thinking about, oh, I'm suffering. And the Pandavas are not thinking, oh, I'm suffering. Bhishma Dev is thinking how much others are suffering, and the Pandavas are thinking how much others are suffering because of this battle that was fought. Yudhisthira was thinking, so much blood has been shed, so many lives have been lost, so many persons are lamenting, dear relatives, husbands, sons, all because of me. He's thinking compassionately. So Bhishma Dev is introducing, actually, you're the ones you've endured so much suffering. What terrible sufferings, what terrible injustices. You good souls suffer for being the sons of religion personified. In other words, for what? For only good things you've had to be mistreated terribly. You did not deserve to remain alive under those tribulations. They were so severe. An ordinary person could not have survived. How were you able to survive? Because you were protected. And what are those three features that provided them protection? Religion. Truth is part of religion. God and Brahmanas. So this will be repeated again as we go along, but this is it's a major part of what we need to contemplate when we're considering how we conduct our life. Controlling is Krishna's department and serving is our department. The outcome of what we do, Krishna's in charge of that. We're not in charge of that. We're in charge of the consciousness that we carry. That's what we're in charge of. And there's three areas that we need to evaluate. Make sure we got it straight. Make sure we're properly situated in our service by following codes of religion, acting according to theistic conduct in all circumstances of life. And how to do that? We take guidance from qualified Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. We seek the guidance of qualified Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. So if we're acting in theistic conduct, according to the guidance of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, what's the consciousness behind that that we're carrying? It must be full dedication to please Krishna. And when those three things are in place, from our side as servants, whatever Krishna decides in the outcome department, that's up to him. He's the controller. If he wants it to go this way, that way, or the other way, or any way he wants it to go, that's fine with us, because he's the controller, he's the master. What we need to be concerned about is these three things. And when we do those three things, we're protected. Religion protects the religious person. Brahma, the favor, the pleasure of the well-wishing of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas gives us protection. And surrendering fully to the satisfaction of Krishna gives us Krishna's protection. Scripture, Vaishnavas, and Krishna. Protection. Now, Maharaj Yudhisthira, he gets A's in all three departments of examination. Was he theistic? A. A plus. The son of Dharma himself, Dharmaraj. Perfectly religious. Perfectly religious. And anything that he did, although he was king, he always consulted qualified brahmanas, and whatever their indication was, that's what he did. Perfectly submissive. A plus. And dearmost to his life was Krishna. There would have been no battle of Kurukshetra unless Krishna wanted it. Krishna wanted it, Yudhisthira did it. Only because Krishna wanted it. Confirmed by the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas and according to the codes of religion. That means we're going to hear at the end of this section, therefore, no cause for lamentation. Have there been difficulties? You bet there have been difficulties. Why have there been difficulties? Krishna planned it that way. Time. So, Bhishma's analyzing. Apparently, not good results. Plenty. For you, the Pandavas. You good souls. Suffer for being the sons of religion personified? As far as my daughter-in-law Kunti is concerned? This is Bhishma speaking. So, how is Bhishma connected to Kunti? How is she's the daughter-in-law? Bhishma doesn't have any children. But as intimate family members, Bhishma had brothers. Bhishma was the son of Ganga Devi. And his two brothers, Chatrangada and Vichitravirya, they are sons of Satyavati, co-wives of Santanu. And Satyavati, the sons of Satyavati Chitrangada and Vichitravirya. Vichitravirya did not have sons, but the wives, the co-wives of Vichitravirya did, by Vyasadeva. And Pandu was one of those three sons, and Kunti is the wife of Pandu. So, skipping all the details, he just says, my daughter-in-law. Such close affection. And then the grandchildren are the Pandavas. As far as my daughter-in-law Kunti is concerned, upon the great general Pandu's death, she became a widow with many children. And therefore she suffered greatly. And when you were grown up, she suffered a great deal also because of your actions. Now it's not like they did bad actions, but they, because of the difficulty they were put through, Kunti was put through the same difficulties. In my opinion, so this is undeserving. How did it happen? In my opinion, inevitable time. Under whose control? In every planet, everyone is carried. Just as the clouds are carried by the wind. So this is a metaphor where the wind is being compared to time, and the clouds in the sky are being compared to everybody. The wind moves. When we look up in the sky, we can see the clouds moving. And not only they're moving, but they're changing shapes. And sometimes, I was watching the sky the other day, the clouds just went away. Then another time, not so long ago, the clouds were just very gentle and moving, and very quickly, within about 3-4 minutes, they became dark, black, pitch black, and it rained. Just... So, the wind, the moisture in the air, makes clouds, and that's being carried by the wind. The moisture in the air really doesn't have too much to say about it. It's just getting carried along. And people are also getting carried along by time. Another similar metaphor that's used is straws in the river. Throw a bunch of straws in the river. And you watch the straws. And sometimes the straws are floating separately. The movements of the waves. Some straws cluster together, and then other straws cluster together, and other straws cluster together. And then it seems that they're stuck together, and the waves are moving, and it doesn't matter which way the waves are moving, they stick together. And then all of a sudden they're dispersed. They can't come back together. You don't have the will to come together, although you may be willing, oh, please come together again. They're just scattered. The movements of the waves of the river. And the straws on the river. The clouds in the sky. And events in people's lives and time. Time has brought us all together. And time will disperse us all. And it's inevitable. Who would have thought all of us would be together here today? 10 years ago. We didn't even know each other 10 years ago. And here we are. And guess what? We're all going to be dispersed. By the same force that is bringing us together. Will separate us. At least in this physical sense. Coming together, dispersing. It moves all, time moves all things. It's one of the five main teachings of Bhagavad Gita, right? And without time, you don't have events. When Krishna or Mahavishnu glances over Pradhan, there's the living entities, and with the living entities, there's karma, there's material nature, and there's the Supreme Lord. There's four of the five factors. But you don't have things happening without time. That the glance also carries the time energy of the Lord. Because otherwise you don't have events. Just like same, being here together. There was a time when we were not assembled in this room. And for some time we're here together. And some time passes and we'll disperse from this room. Time energy is essential for events. Without time, you don't have events. Unless you're in the spiritual world and time is eternal, then you have eternal events. But events that were, it was within our experience, time is necessary. And the same time, so Bhishma Dev is saying, time is a very mysterious factor. I find it very interesting to contemplate. In one sense, Krishna says, time I am. In another sense, time is Kala Shakti. And in one sense, time is eternal. In another sense, time is temporary, but that is illusory time. But without illusory time, you don't have illusory events. It's all under Krishna's control. It's really fascinating. And we don't see it. Yet it's always there. We think of time like, okay, it's 8:10 in the morning. But it's not just, that's just a measure of, it's a way we talk about time. But time is, it's a force that's moving everything. Everything. The wall that's just standing there, it's under the influence of time. In time, it's going to be a pile of dust. Time. Just let it stand there. Don't touch it. Just let it stand there. There'll be a pile of dust. Time is acting at all intervals of temporary time. And in the swifter course of, besides the deterioration of cement walls, even steel reinforced cement walls will deteriorate. Are the events of lives. It's moved by time. We think, we don't factor it. I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to build my life. I'm going to make my career. I'm going to something. We're just on a conveyor belt and time is moving us along. And events are happening. There's some factor, our endeavor is one of the five factors of action. In the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna indicates endeavor is one of the factors. So what? Well, there must be some endeavor, but that's not sufficient. The overriding thing is the Supreme Lord. Through whom this time energy is receiving its impetus. And he's situated in our heart, just observing things. It's really fascinating. Krishna set up a very interesting network of appearances and realities. So, Grandfather Bhishma is reminding Maharaj Yudhisthira about an invincible reality, the time energy. Prabhupada writes, everyone has to bear the actions and reactions of time. Now that sounds like karma. The actions and reactions of karma. But he's saying time. Because in one sense, time moves karma. Just like karma is there with the living entity when the living entity is dormant within pradhan. Karma is there. When cosmic annihilation takes place, all matter is withdrawn into its subtle and primordial state, its avyakta state, and the living entities are brought within a resting position within the body of Mahavishnu. And along with the living entities, their karma, in a dormant state. Karma is there. But karma doesn't act without the time energy, moving it. So, both statements are correct statements, and even a more precise causal statement is everyone has to bear the actions and reactions of time, as long as one is within the conditions of the material world. What's the conditions of the material world? It's forgetfulness of our relationship with Krishna. That brings us into the material world, and remembrance of our relationship with Krishna, acting within our relationship with Krishna, carries us to the spiritual world. It carries us beyond time. It carries us beyond karma. It carries us beyond the modes of nature. It carries us beyond past, present, and future. Temporary time. Krishna consciousness carries us to that position. How valuable is Krishna consciousness? It defeats the material energy. That's pretty good. And we can't do it. And that's nice. It means we can only do that with our loving relationship with Krishna. That's nice. It's supremely nice. We can't go there alone. And persons that are independent-minded towards Krishna, we're not going to meet up with those people in the spiritual world. They'll stay here. And we can't go there either without abandoning that independent from Krishna mentality. We can't overcome the binding forces of time and karma and our own stupid desires, except through descending mercy of loving relationship with Krishna, which comes into our lives through these Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and through the scriptures, and through Krishna's directly prompting us from within the heart. We take shelter of those features of protection, and we're on the other side of time. Now, the Pandavas were perfectly religious, perfectly in tune with the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and perfectly in their relationship with Krishna. So Bhishma Dev's building a case. Even you have reversals. What does that mean? It's not due to karma. It's not that you've done something sinful, Maharaj Yudhisthira, and you deserve to lament sorrowfully for the sinful activity and the outcome of the sinful activity. No. It's the time energy. And time energy is indicating a plan of Krishna. And because it's the plan of Krishna, what are you going to do about it? Lament about it? You should celebrate it. It's the plan of Krishna, Hari Bol. Go with it. Krishna wants you to be the ruler. Oh, how wonderful is the influence of inevitable time. It is irreversible. How can there be reverses in the presence of King Yudhisthira, the son of the demigod controlling religion? Bhima, the great fighter with a club. The great bowman Arjuna with his mighty weapon Gandiva. And above all, the Lord, who is the direct well-wisher of the Pandavas. He's the controller. And difficulties come into the lives of those who are intimately connected to him. How's this going on? It's the plan of the Lord. What else can it be? And, O King, no one can know the plan of Lord Sri Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they're bewildered. Don't try to figure out the plan of Krishna. Don't try to, I wonder what's in Krishna's mind with this. Prabhupada even cautioned, one should not try to understand the mind of the spiritual master. It's as if doing so, he didn't elaborate, but doing so is as if it's something within the field of my capacity is quite limited, like, you know, speculation. And then I can bring something that's not, that's transcendental within the realm of speculation. So that means I just brought my spiritual master into the material field. And now I'm gauging. One should not do like that, he cautioned. Now, in another sense, we want to know Krishna's indication. We often say that each thing that happens to us, there's some lesson to learn from that something that's happening. What is that lesson that we need to learn? What would Krishna like me to learn? Those lessons become disclosed. It's not like you can sit and figure it out. That's the idea. Don't speculate. But Krishna will disclose it. He'll make it so clear. And if things are not at the point of being so clear, what do? You take shelter of theistic conduct. You follow the indications of Vaishnavas and Brahmanas, and you dedicate yourself fully to the service of Krishna. Counting on Krishna will disclose. At least he'll guide. His unseen hand will guide things in such a way. Like with the Pandavas. Again and again in this first canto, there's this repeated message that Krishna put the Pandavas in difficulty. And then Krishna removed the difficulty. And then he put them in another difficulty. And then he removed the difficulty. And then he put them in, and just kept doing that. Again and again and again and again. What do you think that did to the Pandavas? They started to resent Krishna? Why are you putting us in difficulty? You're your devotees in difficulty again and again. No, they liked it. Not only Kunti liked it, they all liked it. It's not exactly they liked the difficulties. They liked the intimacy with Krishna. That's what devotees like. And if Krishna wants to bring that intimacy by putting us in difficulty, let the difficulties roll. Intimacy with Krishna. Yeah, it's in this. Section. In text 19. Where Bhishma Dev considers this to be one of Krishna's glories. The word that Bhishma uses is anubhav. So, some of you have read Nectar of Devotion. Right? Who's read Nectar of Devotion? You read Nectar Devotion? Yeah. Okay. So in nectar devotion, there are three divisions. Vaidhi bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. And in the bhava bhakti section, it's about bhavas. And one of the bhavas is sthayi bhava, steady ecstasy. But also the bodily transformations is anubhava. That's how we're accustomed, followers of Rupa Goswami, we're accustomed to hearing the term anubhava. Here in the first canto, Bhishma Deva is using anubhava as the glories of Krishna. Prabhupada is explaining it like that. So there's the beginning of bodily transformation, that kind of anubhava, and that is association with a great devotee who describes Krishna and connects us with Krishna through those sound vibrations. And when that connection becomes very firm and secure beyond the anartha stage into the attachment and ecstasy stage, then bodily transformations such as perspiring, trembling, uncontrollably, bodily eruptions, weeping, spontaneously just coming within the body. That's a preliminary stage of anubhava, and that preliminary stage of anubhava is further enhanced, Prabhupada writes, by steady understanding of the glories of the Lord. And he gives as examples such different understandings of bhavas are exchanged between Yasoda and the Lord. When Yasoda binds, specifically, when Yasoda binds Krishna by ropes. That's an example of Mother Yasoda. She was experiencing bodily ecstasies. I mean, you know, transformations of body in the ecstasy of binding Krishna with a rope. Not like, I get to bind Krishna. But just the ecstasy of that intense absorption upon the object of her love in the affection of Mother. Symptoms of anubhava, the bodily transformations, were erupting. And then when Krishna finally allowed her to bind him, it's one of the glories of Krishna. Or another example is the chariot driving by the Lord in the exchange of love with Arjuna. The chariot driving of the Lord in an exchange of love with Arjuna. So Krishna was in ecstasy driving Arjuna's chariot. He was in ecstasy receiving the arrows of Grandfather Bhishma. And Arjuna was in the ecstasy of fulfilling Krishna's instruction by completely focused on fighting the battle. In unprecedented strength, he was in ecstasy. These glories of the Lord are exhibited in his being subordinate before his devotees. These are stimulations for ecstatic love, but they're also manifestations of ecstatic love. Krishna enjoys subordinating himself to his devotee, his pure devotee. And when that happens, the devotee experiences ecstasy. When he even hears about it, just like the illiterate Brahmin in Sri Rangam, just by, although he couldn't read Bhagavad Gita, he was in ecstasy just thinking about Krishna subordinating himself to the love of Arjuna by being the chariot driver of Arjuna, driving the horses of the chariot of Arjuna. Participating in, even hearing about its ecstasy. Why don't we experience ecstasy when we read Bhagavad Gita? Little story, little anecdote. This happened about 2 weeks ago in Vrindavan. Some of you have been to Vrindavan. Have you been to Vrindavan? No, let him. I'm just teasing. Vrindavan, our temple in Vrindavan is surrounded by a big wall, tall wall, and there's gates so people go in the main gate. Just as you go in the main gate to the left and to the right and further down also there's book stalls. So one old bearded guru, very, crimson colored dhoti with many followers, he came to see Krishna Balaram and Krishna Balaram Mandir. And he stopped by the bookstall and he saw Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita and he purchased Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita and put it under his arm and kept walking. Went into the temple, saw the deities. And all his followers followed him. And he came back to Krishna Balaram Mandir next day. The little Mataji that was very enthusiastically being in charge of the book table noticed the man approaching, and he came right up to her at the table and he said something to the effect that, "I have been speaking on Bhagavad Gita for 30 years and I had no idea what is Bhagavad Gita. I had no idea that I didn't have an idea what is Bhagavad Gita until I read this Bhagavad Gita. And this Bhagavad Gita is so clear. The person, your guru, who has written this book, he is seeing Krishna and Arjuna." He was crying, and I just had to come and express this to you. I'm so grateful that I now have an understanding of Bhagavad Gita from your spiritual master. Thank you so much. And he was sobbing, and he just turned and left and went back out the gate. And the Mataji that reported this said, "Why don't I cry like that when I read Bhagavad Gita?" And who knows what was affecting the man's heart? Who knows how many lifetimes he's been looking for the genuine thing? But when finding the genuine thing, it moved him. It threw him such a distance. We should be so eager. At least the potencies of such glories as Prabhupada is describing for us, the glories of Krishna, are but further features of bhava. Shukadeva Goswami and the Kumaras, although situated in the transcendental position, became converted by another feature of bhava and became pure devotees of the Lord. Tribulations, because this is what this section is about, the tribulation of Yudhisthira, the tribulation of Bhishma, the tribulation of Kunti. And the lesson is, we also have our tribulations. They're small time compared to theirs, but for us in our mind it's big time tribulations. Tribulations imposed upon the devotees of the Lord similarly constitute another exchange of transcendental bhava between the Lord and his devotees. So that's what bhava is, right? It's tribulation. It's not the tribulation. It's the exchange of ecstatic affection with the Lord that comes when one is situated rightly in Krishna consciousness. And supposing one is not situated rightly in Krishna consciousness and some tribulation comes. Prabhupada writes, the Lord says, I put my devotees into difficulty, and thus the devotees become more purified in exchanging transcendental bhava with me. That's when the pandavas are put into difficulty. They experience more bhava, more ecstasy. When we're put into difficulty, we struggle to remember Krishna. That's good. Struggling to remember Krishna is good, because otherwise we're just complacent. Everything's fine, the weather's fine, money's fine, relationships are fine, everything's fine. Then, oh, Krishna! Draupadi, unalloyed devotee. Throughout, the difficulties she was put through, being disrobed, and she was fearless. She was fearless when Durvas Muni came to the palace. Everyone ran this way and that way and that way. Draupadi just wanted to serve Durvas Muni, and she served so nicely. Let me give you this benediction. Here's this magic pot. And then when Durvas Muni came again, when they were in the forest, she had the magic pot, but after the magic pot was such that it wouldn't produce anything further. After she took, and she would only take after her husband's and Kunti were fed. And Duryodhana, he knew exactly when that would be. And that's when the timing was. Durvas Muni would reach right at that time with his thousands of followers. And when Durvas Muni gets angry, I won't even have to fight a battle with those guys. They'll be finished. So everyone was in great anxiety, tribulation. Mahabharata describes Kunti called out Krishna's name with such intensity all the way in Dwarka. Krishna heard her. And he came at once and he sat right in front of her. Just like that. Draupadi, what's the problem? He knew what the problem was. He orchestrated the problem. Or at least sanctioned that Duryodhana would do this thing and Durvas would follow the indication. Tribulation, ecstasy, Krishna. There's nothing. Give me something from the pot. There's nothing in the pot. Give me the pot. I'll find something. Little morsel. From the pot of Draupadi, Krishna is completely satisfied. And when Krishna is completely satisfied, Durvas Muni didn't even come back. And all of his followers didn't come back. They were feeling full because Krishna was satisfied. How do we satisfy Krishna? Big feast, right? Pure love and devotion. That's how we satisfy Krishna. Pure love and devotion. When we're calling out to Krishna with complete dependency upon Him, in great ecstasy calling upon Him, Krishna is very pleased. And everything becomes adjusted. Placing the devotees into material troubles necessitates delivering him from illusory material relations. That's Kunti's prayer, right? Please cut these bonds of material affection. And when that happens, We feel, ah! And we also feel relief. How many of us here in this room have prayed to Krishna, "My dear Lord Krishna, please, you know what is in my heart, so many impure things, kindly remove those impure things. Whatever it takes, I'm ready." Krishna hears such a sincere prayer, and Krishna reciprocates with the sincere prayer of his devotees, and those impure things he removes. And sometimes we start screaming, "No, not that. I didn't mean like that. I meant..." Krishna has his plan. And events move. The straws move in the river, the clouds move in the sky, and the events of who we come in contact with that give us opportunities to become fully dependent upon Krishna, fully surrendered unto Krishna, to serve in different ways with persons with different character and different strengths and shortcomings. When we have community like this, we all have the opportunity to experience each other's strengths and each other's shortcomings. Krishna has brought all of us together. Specifically, out of all the population of the planet, because not everybody's from this particular place, we're from different places. And here we are, together. It's Krishna's plan. Let us serve Krishna together with love and gratitude in our heart for the arrangement that Krishna has made that we can render some service unto him. We can be his instrument of his descending mercy of devotional service, and let us just carry that and not place so many conditions. "Wait a minute, I want the cloud configuration to be like this instead of like that. I want the cluster of straws to be like that instead of like this." It's our opportunity. This is our opportunity for serving. It's Krishna's arrangement. Accept it. Say yes to Krishna's arrangement and serve from our hearts with great affection and gratitude. "Krishna, thank you for making these arrangements." And let each individual member of the community rise to that mood as each other one successfully and successively comes to that mood. Then it becomes the mood of the community. Because it's the mood of the individual members of the community. Now, the dynamic here is that Bhishma has it. Bhishma is the instructor of Yudhisthira. He's the grandfather. In the absence of Pandu, Bhishma and Vidura took that role, like the father, the grandfather, and the uncle took that role. What great instructors! And because of those great instructors, the Pandavas, here in this case in particular, but in other cases in general, they were able to manifest that mood of just putting aside their own stuff, their own concerns, and problems, and taking up the service, the greater cause. O best among the descendants of Bharata, in this case Yudhisthira, I maintain therefore that all this is within the plan of the Lord. Accepting the inconceivable plan of the Lord, here's the instruction, you must follow it. He's our master. Not only your master, he's my master. He's our master. It's his plan. You're not in the penalty box for sin. You're sinless. The Lord has a plan. Let us serve our Master, just as Bhishma was serving him. You serve him. Bhishma was serving Krishna by instructing Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira was to serve Krishna by following Krishna's plan. You are now the appointed administrative head and my lord. Grandfather Bhishma is saying to Yudhisthira, my lord. In other words, I'm respecting you as the emperor because I, Grandfather Bhishma, cannot become king or emperor. I've taken a vow not to. You're the emperor. You're my lord. Oh, my lord, I'm your minister. I'm advising you. I'm your grandfather. I'm your instructor. You should now take care of those subjects who are rendered helpless. That's the end of his convincing argument. Now he turns his he's in ecstasy. As he's lying in his deathbed, tears of ecstasy are streaming from his eyes. He's experiencing these bodily transformations of ecstasy. And why? Because he's speaking about Krishna to his dearmost Pandavas headed by Yudhisthira. So now he just fully turns his attention to Krishna. He's ecstatic. He's carrying his ecstasies, are carrying Yudhisthira to out of lamentation into acceptance, into ecstasy. This, Sri Krishna, see him standing here? Right here. This Sri Krishna, is none other than the inconceivable original personality of Godhead. Your cousin. Ha! He's the personality of Godhead. The original Narayan. The supreme enjoyer. But he is moving amongst the descendants of King Vrishni, just like one of us. And he is bewildering us with his self-created energy. Now in the purport it explains, he's not bewildering Bhishma. There's two kinds of energies by which Krishna bewilders. There's Mahamaya and Yogamaya. Bhishma Dev, he's situated in devotional service. But he's not unclear at all who Krishna is. He's declared it many times, and he's doing it again, and he gets great ecstasy declaring it. Whether people want to hear it or not. Oh, in Yudhisthira's case, he wants to hear it. O King, Lord Shiva, Narada, the sage amongst the demigods, and Kapila, the incarnation of Godhead, all know very confidentially about his glories. That's where this Anubhava term. The glories of Krishna. So, Krishna may cover his real identity with glories that for ordinary people bewilder them. But for the persons listed here, and Bhishma included, it's evidence of Krishna's identity. It's not a bewildering feature that makes you think, oh, this is mythology or something else. It drives them into ecstasy, and it's the source of verification of Krishna's position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the position of the Mahajans, so Prabhupada explains in the purport. This is 4 out of 12, because Bhishma Dev is speaking, and he's identifying 3 others that are in the list of 12 Mahajans. Lord Shiva, Kapila, incarnation of Godhead, and Narada. Krishna Das, you know what those 12 are in Sanskrit? Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu. Kumara, Kapila, Manu, Prahlada, Janaka, Bhishma, Balir Vyasaki Vayam and Yudhisthira and Yamaraj. So rather than listing all 12, he's listed 3 plus himself, saying that such persons understand the science of bhava, and the science of anubhava, and the science of the glories of Krishna, and this difficulty, and then Krishna releasing the devotees from difficulty. It's part of the glories of Krishna. Arjuna understands it too. When he comes back and speaks to Yudhisthira, he's spotlessly clear how Krishna's glories were manifested again and again and again through Arjuna, but Arjuna's not taking any of the credit. He's in ecstasy, glorified. He's in great, terrible tribulation because of the absence of Krishna, but even in that tribulation of absence of Krishna, separation from Krishna, he's experiencing ecstasy, remembering Krishna. He has this big mixture of emotions going on. So whenever some situation of feeling disconnected from Guru and Krishna, recite the glories of those personalities. Bring into your memory and describe them. Like the devotees, they just had this, it's the 108th anniversary year of Srila Prabhupada's appearance in this world, because he appeared in 1896. So in the year 2004, that's 108, through 2005, his appearance day. So it ends in Janmashtami, the day after Janmashtami. So they held in Bombay, 5-day festival or something like that, with devotees from all over the world coming, and then again in Mayapur, right now it's going on, festival in honor of Srila Prabhupada. Glorifying Prabhupada, glorifying Prabhupada, glorifying Prabhupada. Same thing that Arjuna did, glorifying Krishna's glories. Now, through Prabhupada's association, very ordinary people became very glorious. Even crazy people became glorious. And the understanding is it's the glories of our founder Acharya. And that's a manifestation of the glories of Krishna. And when one's deep appreciation for the glories of Guru and Krishna awaken, bewilderment of material attraction and all that goes with it is gone. Say it the other way around. When one forgets one's connection with Krishna and spiritual master, in comes bewilderment of delusion of duality and material desire and everything that goes with it. So Bhishma Dev is having an ecstatic time glorifying Krishna's real position. And supposing we're not a Mahajan. I don't know, maybe there's some Mahajans here in the room. You a Mahajan? No. So then how are you going to understand Krishna's position? By the grace of such persons. And the grace of such persons comes down through the disciplic succession. Prabhupada is presenting that right here in the Srimad Bhagavatam for anybody and everybody to connect with. During Prabhupada's presence and after his departure. These books are a great treasure. Told this story in Hyderabad. It was common thing when new books would be published, devotees loved to personally deliver them, because when Prabhupada received them, he just lit up like a light bulb. He radiated joy that just illuminated the room and filled the hearts of everybody that was there, just holding the book so gently and respectfully and looking at the pages and big smile and looking around and just so happy and looking at the book again. And it was like a love affair with this literature. And then one time after that happened, he suddenly closed the book and looked at the devotees in a very grave manner. And the nature of being with a person like Prabhupada is, whatever his mood was, he was heavy. Guru means heavy. One of the meanings of guru is heavy. And as Prabhupada's mood became very serious, everyone became very serious. Just, when he laughed, everyone laughed. When he was angry, everyone trembled. Just because he was the person that he was, and we had such complete connection of affection for him. He became very serious and very grave. He looked around the room and said, one day there may be no temples. One day there may be no devotees. But there will always be my books. And everyone then got the cue, Jai Prabhupada. Meaning, he was giving Krishna's association through his books. And he was Krishna's instrument for Krishna giving that association through the medium of Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada fully understood that. And because of that full realization, he dedicated so much energy to preparing these books. On another occasion he said, people are mad after these books. Unprecedented in the history of religion, people are buying religious books. Why? People are attracted to them because they're written from the position of realization. It's not speculation, perhaps maybe some scholar or theologian. They're written from realization. Your son is having ecstasy over by the altar there, Sanjay. Oh, here he comes. Okay. See you later. Okay. O King, that personality whom, out of ignorance only, you thought to be your maternal cousin? Ha! Your very dear friend, well-wisher, counselor, messenger, benefactor, etc., is that very dear personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. This is the beam above. He wants to glorify Krishna's real position and hear it from the mouth of Grandfather Bhishma. Being the absolute personality of Godhead, he is present in everyone's heart. He's standing here, but guess what? He's the one who's in everyone's heart. He's guiding everyone. He is there from Antaryami, their guide and well-wisher, director. The best friend of everyone. He is free from false ego differentiation, therefore whatever he does, including reversals, it's free from material inebriety. He's equal balanced. Yet despite his being equally kind to everyone, look at this. He's come here at the time of my death. Even I've been fighting on the opposite side from you, apparently disobeying or displeasing him. He knows my heart and he's come here before you, before me at the time of my death. And that's the concluding point that I'd like to make here. This, one of the themes of this section is Grandfather Bhishma giving up his body. So it's a lesson on how to die. Just as the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam is a lesson of how to die. And that's morbid, right? You don't talk about death because it's morbid. Just talk about nice things. Don't talk about those things. But by the time factor, it's inevitable. And whatever consciousness we're in at that time of death, that's going to determine where the soul goes. So it's very important to talk about it. And Grandfather Bhishma is setting an example. At the time of death, your lifetime should be a preparation so that by remembering Krishna and absorbing yourself in Krishna thought through the medium of serving Him through all the things that you do, Krishna thought is so strong such that at the time of death when everything disintegrates and all those things that you're depending upon just take for granted, they stop functioning. Where's your consciousness going to be? Krishna is very kind. He's come before me so that my desire to see Him to the last breath of my life, see His smiling face and His four-armed form. Krishna's fulfilling that desire. Here He is. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that ends Bhishma's pacifying Yudhisthira and elevating him to ecstasy, convincing him, yes, I'll do my service. I'll take the plan of the Lord and I'll go with the plan of the Lord. And the next section is, how do I do that duty? As the king, it's my duty to see that everybody is engaged in their prescribed duties. Can you elaborate in detail on the prescribed duties of the four classes of society, all the varnas and ashrams and so forth? In Mahabharata, it's a very large section of Mahabharata. It's very important. Teachings from Bhishma on the duties of life. So in the Bhagavatam, it's a short section. It's just summarizing. Okay. So end there and see if you have any comments or questions.
Because of the condition, we actually have so many anathas in the mind. And because of those anathas, when we are practicing devotional service, there are almost obstacles in our relationship with Krishna and our service. And then we, by training, we use our intelligence to work on the
I'll repeat the question, especially for the sake of the recording. On the path of devotional service, we meet obstacles in the form of our own anarthas. And when we meet them, we bring our intelligence to bear on those anarthas and etc. Are we to understand those anarthas are arranged by Krishna as like in this category of a tribulation that's meant to bring us closer to Him by dealing with them, or are they just mundane affairs? Another category. That's your question. I'm in the midst of composing a letter to someone explaining exactly what your question is. So I'm, very focused on this. The tribulation is the circumstantial thing. It's the straws, the clouds, in the sky. And those circumstantial things, that tribulation, points to something that's in the heart. It's an orchestration by Krishna to help us get right down to the real business of anartha nivritti. I could elaborate, but it's different. The tribulation factor is we see that it's something out there. This person, that situation, this dynamic, you know, somebody's crazy, somebody's lazy, it's out there. But it's just prompting a reaction of something that's in here. And the eradication of something that's in here is not going to happen just by our, you know, fighting the something that's out there, or even just on our own trying to get rid of the something that's in here. It's spiritual, it's descending mercy. And then it's like Prabhupada's example, a person that's at the bottom of the well, they can't get themselves out of the bottom of the well. Only if somebody lowers a rope and pulls them out, then they can get out of the bottom of the well. And that rope is the person, is the liberated soul, and the rope is the instruction. If one comes in contact with a liberated soul who lowers the rope of instruction, you grab onto the instruction, then you can get out of the bottom of the well. Now there may be details of that instruction that have to do with eradication of the anartha in the heart. But then the tribulation is the circumstance out here that I think it's, you know, the person that's not in the spiritual position of preliminary faith and sadhusanga and bhajana kriya, which includes in the bhajana kriya stage, by the way, Prabhupada always includes the taking shelter of a spiritual master. That is, the persons who are giving us Shiksha Guru as well, giving us instructions. That's the means for the anartha nivritti. Anartha nivritti is not going to happen effectively otherwise. I mean, in a cursory way, to some degree, some unwanted things, you know, meat eating and, you know, the four regular principles, smoking and illicit sex, and we can do those things on the strength of the frame of goodness of wholesome life. But the more subtle things that we, so that's like, you know, Grandfather Bhishma is performing that role. The tribulation is the aftermath of the battle. The liberated soul is Bhishma giving the instruction. The anartha is not exactly anartha, because in Maharaj Yudhisthira's case, he's a pure devotee, but he has this tendency to, due to his deep sense of humility, lament the suffering of others to the extent that he's not performing his duty. That's not good. So, in our case, our non-performance of duty is not because of pure devotion, but comparable. So it's, I think I've answered your question. For us, when tribulations come, it should be seen as an opportunity to intensify our dependency upon Krishna, and also to look internally and see how we can improve ourselves. It's not just to get out of the tribulation. Krishna is very kind. He switched the cloud configuration and the tribulation went away. But we want the anarthas to go away. And in the case of pure devotees, tribulations may very well continue, but then it's with a different purpose. Nice question. Very practical question. Anything? Okay. See the bell pot key?
Yeah. Yeah.